Over this month, we're looking at four different topics that are integral to the Christian life. Last week, it was the cheery subject of death. And we thought about the profound paradox that in the Christian faith, the road to life is death. We saw that in more ways than one. Next week, we're going to look at accountability, and the week after, generosity. But today, our subject is dependence. The late John Stott tells the story. He was a preacher and pastor over in London in a big church called All Souls. He tells the story of one particular Sunday morning when he was due to preach, and he was putting away some laundry, and he tripped over the feet of a swivel chair, and he fell really badly between his bed and a bookcase, and he knew right away that he had broken his hip. He couldn't get up, he couldn't even move. All he could do was press the panic button that was thankfully around his neck, and some friends came shortly to his rescue. The rector of the church found his sermon notes and somehow managed to preach his sermon, which rather appropriately was all about dependence. Stott said that. He said that while the sermon was actually being preached, he said that dependence was at that very moment being illustrated. He said, within an amazingly short time, I'd been moved inert from floor to stretcher, from stretcher to ambulance, from ambulance to hospital bed, from hospital bed to operating theatre. And he said, I woke up to find myself gratefully supplied with a replacement hip. When I read that, I confess that for the last few days, I've been avoiding putting away any laundry whatsoever. In my sermon prep this week, you know, normally I'd be praying, Lord, please give me a good illustration. Not this week. After reading about John Stott, I was praying, Lord, his illustration is fine. I do not need one of my own. I'm kidding, but the point is that nobody wants to be dependent, do they? No one wants to be dependent on other people. I remember my grandmother, who lived to, I think, 97 years old, and I remember her just beginning to get a bit more dependent. And I brought her to church one time, and as we were crossing the road to the church, such a simple thing, I tried to have her take my arm. But no, she had her stick with her, and with her stick she wanted me to know that she could manage just fine, which was debatable. And then there were steps to negotiate. But isn't it true that in many ways we would rather be the helper than the helped? I mean, it was easy for me, you know. And in many ways, even if the job is a lot more than just giving someone your arm, even if the job involves a lot of work and a lot of service, in many ways it's easier to be the helper than to be the helped. Sometimes we hear people say, I don't want to be a burden to anyone else. I'm happy to carry on living so long as I can look after myself. But as soon as I become a burden, I would rather die. Have you ever heard something like that? Maybe you've even said something like that. My aim today is to show that while it's perhaps a very natural thing to say and certainly a very common way to feel, it's also profoundly un-Christian. And that's because we are actually designed by God to be dependent, not only on Him, but also on each other. Think about, as I was saying earlier, think about how you came into this world. At the beginning of your life, you could do absolutely nothing for yourself. You were totally dependent on the love and care and protection of others. And then we go through a phase of life when other people depend on us. And we learn, we grow up, we work hard so that all being well, we can provide for ourselves and also for others around us. And that's really important. Paul says a lot about that in his letters. But even in that stage, when other people are depending on us, even then, we're not meant to be completely independent. The one thing in creation, whenever God made the world, the one thing that God said was not good was for the man to be alone. Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. Everything else in creation was good, good, good. You know, in Genesis chapter 1, every day of creation, whatever God made, he saw that it was good. God saw that it was good. He saw that it was good. He saw that it was good. And therefore, it's very striking in chapter 2 when God says of Adam, it's not good for him to be alone. I will make a suitable helper for him. There was no way that Adam alone could do what God had called him to do. In his love, God wanted to fill the whole earth with human beings. They would bear his image, you know, being like him in the world. They would live and work together under God, loving and being loved, serving and being served, helping and being helped. That's our design as human beings. We are never to imagine that we could be independent, either from God or from each other, because we're not made to be like that. We need each other. So we come into the world completely dependent. We then get to a stage when other people depend on us, and yet we still need each other. And then think about how we exit this world. Most of us will become completely and totally dependent once again on the love and care of others. And though we may recoil, and though we may resist it, it is part of God's plan. John Wyatt, a professor of ethics and perinatology at University College Hospital in London, he calls it our mutual burdensomeness. Bit of a mouthful, that. Our mutual burdensomeness. In words that are completely countercultural, he says very starkly that we are all designed to be a burden to others. You are designed to be a burden to me, and I'm designed to be a burden to you. And the life of the family, including the life of the local church family, should be one of mutual burdensomeness. You think of what Paul says in Galatians chapter 6, verse 2. Paul the Apostle says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. I want to quote quite extensively this morning from that man, John Wyatt, the professor of ethics and perinatology. The reason I want to quote from him quite extensively is because he happens to serve and care for some of the most dependent people on the planet. John Wyatt is a specialist in the medical care of newborn babies. He works sometimes with little premature babies as young as 22 weeks, just 500 grams fitting into the palm of his hand. And he says in his department there's an understanding of what it means to be human. Human life is precious. There's massive investment that goes into caring for these tiny little human beings. He says that it's about £1,500 per day per baby. And he says the total cost of caring for a premature baby can be as much as £100,000. However, he says, and this is a kind of strange juxtaposition, he says that just one floor away in the same hospital is the fetal medicine unit, and he says that unit has a very different understanding of what it means to be human. These are his words. He says, there's a different understanding of what it means to be human. It's the unit to which women are referred to if an abnormality is picked up. And he said, in my own hospital, he said, on a regular basis, late abortions are carried out at 24, 26, 28, 30, even 32 weeks, because of a medical abnormality that has been picked up. And he said, on many occasions, he said, I've been called away from the neonatal unit where we're struggling to save the life of a baby, maybe at 23, 24 weeks, to go one floor to counsel a woman who is considering having an abortion, and the baby in her womb is considerably bigger and tougher and stronger than the baby we're struggling to save just one floor down. And as he wrestles with that, he puts it down to different understandings of what it means to be human, operating right there in the same hospital, just one floor apart. And he notes that over the years there's been a distinct change in language. He says that many now argue that if you become aware of an abnormality, he says that nowadays people talk even that it's a duty a duty to have an abortion. For example, Glenn McGee, philosopher at the Center for Bioethics in Philadelphia, says there can be no question that a couple who find out that their infant is sure to suffer and die incur special responsibilities. From time to time, genetic testing will suggest a duty to abort. That's Glenn McGee, philosopher at the Center for Bioethics in Philadelphia. And John Wyatt says that, you know, it's interesting the change in language over the years. He said in the 60s in the UK, whenever abortion was first legalized, the language was one of compassion related to exceptional circumstances. Then with the rise of feminism, the language was all about liberation, my body, my choice. And now he says the language is about duty, that it would be irresponsible to bring this or that baby into the world. And he says that as technology advances, people are going to be presented with information and choices that were just unthinkable not that long ago. He said it's now possible for a pregnant woman to have a blood test, a simple blood test, and to extract from that blood the fetal DNA, the genetic code of the fetus. And effectively, you will end up with a complete readout of the DNA of the fetus during pregnancy. So he said, you know, just fast forward 5 or 10 years. You or your wife or your daughter is pregnant, everything is fine. She goes along to the doctor, and the doctor says, we'd just like to do a simple blood test. You go back 2 weeks later, and they say, we've got some news for you. You're carrying a little girl, congratulations. Unfortunately, there's a 60% chance that she'll get breast or ovarian cancer before the age of 50. She's got increased risk of type 2 diabetes, and also there's an increased risk of Alzheimer's disease. Do you think it would be right to bring this baby into the world? Or do you think maybe it would be better to have an abortion and think about maybe trying for another baby? Would it be responsible for you to have this child? These are the kind of conversations that we are going to be faced with, challenges that we're going to be faced with in the not too distant future. So he talks about beginning of life issues. He also talks about end of life issues, like euthanasia and assisted suicide. Jeff Spector was a successful businessman, but he knew that he had a tumor at the base of his spine. And if that tumor started pressing on his spine, he was going to end up disabled and in a wheelchair. And he couldn't bear the prospect of that. So in the end, he got his family together and he said, I've decided to go to the Dignitas Clinic and end my life. And I'm doing this because it's in your interests as well as mine. And I want to control the time and I want to control the manner of my death. I don't want to end up in a wheelchair. And that's what he did. And he had his final meal with his family and his friends. And they tried to dissuade him, but he said, if you really love me, you'll support me in this. And he went to Dignitas and he was killed. John Wyatt also tells of a young man called Daniel James, a very promising rugby player, who was involved in a terrible rugby accident. He was paralysed from the neck down. He became deeply depressed and then persuades his parents, if you really love me, you'd help me to kill myself. And eventually they agree and they take him to Dignitas and he is killed. And Wyatt remarks that the general comments in the newspapers were actually pretty positive. What caring parents? Because they put the interest of their child first and they weren't selfish and they did what the child wanted and helped him to kill himself. This is the world we live in. And this is why looking at this issue of dependence really matters. How will the church respond to this kind of thinking that is now prevalent in our society? We see it not only in relation to suicide, we also see it in regard to how people view dementia. Mary Warnock, moral philosopher in the UK, said this: if you're demented, you're wasting people's lives, your family's lives, you're wasting the resources to care for you. I'm absolutely fully in agreement with the argument that if pain is insufferable, then someone should be given help to die. But I feel that there's a wider argument, that if someone absolutely desperately wants to die because they're a burden to their family or the state, then I think they too should be allowed to die. That is Mary Warnock, a well-known moral philosopher. as Christians, we have to show people a better way. And yet, if you ask people in church how they would like to die, most would say, I think, you can correct me afterwards if I'm wrong, I think most of us would say that, well, at night, in bed, you know, just slip away in your sleep. No drama, no suffering, all very peaceful. And well, that of course seems a whole lot nicer than becoming totally dependent on others for everything. Could it be that we have bought into an unchristian mindset that is increasingly prevalent in our culture, that whatever happens, we must never become a burden to anyone? I mean, of course we don't want to become a burden to anyone, but we have nevertheless got to come to terms with the fact that dependence is integral to our very design as human beings. And that doesn't make us people of no dignity or status or worth, because we need to teach and remind ourselves and the world around us that we are made in the image of God. The weakest and the most vulnerable and dependent human being is still, in their weakness, is still someone who bears the image of the living God. And that is why our mutual burdensomeness is so important. It's when we bear one another's burdens, as Paul calls us to in Galatians 6 verse 2, it's when we do that, that we show people what we believe about the dignity and the worth of human beings, no matter how dependent they are. May we look at the most dependent and vulnerable and weakest human beings whom we meet and let them know that it is good they exist, that it is good they are in the world, and that it's good they are here. Because one day it might be us. And the gospel of God coming to serve us in Jesus Christ is what enables us to embrace dependence. Thinking about the God of the universe, the God of total independence, total power, total control, this God came into the world as a tiny, vulnerable human being. Just think about that. We can't really get our heads around it, but Jesus, the Son of God, through whom everything was made, the one who at all times was upholding the whole universe by the power of his word, this Jesus needed to be fed and cleaned and changed and propped up when he rolled over. And at the end of his life on the cross, he was, of course, a pathetic figure. He was stretched out on the cross, unable to move, and asking for a drink. The man of supreme worth and worthy of all praise, yet utterly dependent. And therefore, dependence, however humiliating it may be, it can never, ever, ever rob a person of their true dignity. Not ever. And because of Christ's humility, we're not merely given an example of dependence. We're given hope in a future that we don't deserve. His death in our place means that if we turn to him and depend only on him and his work on the cross to make us right with him, then we get forgiveness that is full and free and a welcome into his eternal kingdom, where we shall have a life in all its fullness forever. And it begins, and we need to see this, that it begins with acknowledging our complete dependence on Christ and his finished work on the cross. But how terrible it would be if we tried to have a proud independence from him. That would be the greatest folly of all. If we tried to live independently from God, that would be a rebellion that would result in utter hopelessness and misery and doom forever. Let's be sure that we relate to Christ not only as the King whom we must serve, we must first of all relate to him, and he must first of all be for us the King who serves us. He's the King. You know, without him and his forgiveness and his righteousness, we're absolutely doomed. We cannot save ourselves from sin and death and hell. So let him serve you Let him serve you. Bring him all your sin and all your shame and ask him to do for you what you absolutely cannot do for yourself. And then ask him to teach you dependence throughout your whole life. That having been served by him, we would find the humility to be weak before one another and to be served by each other. And bear in mind that's not just our design, that's also our future. You know, whenever Christ comes again and makes all things new and even gives us bodies that will never perish or, you know, decay ever again, know that that glory will not be the acquiring at last of some proud independence and autonomy. In glory with the resurrected bodies, we will be strong and imperishable, yes, but we will never, ever be independent, either from God or from each other. Instead, we will need each other, even through eternity, in the new creation. We will need each other to work and live for his glory forever and ever, continually serving and being served, loving and being loved forever. This is our future as well as our design. So may God teach us dependence.